Baker.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Do you remember those early months of the pandemic? You might have heard that idea that Shakespeare wrote King Lear while quarantined during the plague. These are the sort of facts that people were hearing that sort of enhance that pressure to be productive while spending time at home during the restrictions and stay-at-home orders. That is, if you had the luxury to work from home. The pandemic's restrictions prompted new ways of being productive as well, from time-consuming hobbies like baking sourdough bread to tie-dyeing loungewear. There's also a rise in TikToks and YouTubes on productivity, where people share the best ways of organizing their desk space or how to be that girl, meaning high-achieving and organized. Yet as many people felt pressure to grow or tackle passion projects during the pandemic, others are pushing back against that idea. Joining us now to talk about the ways the pandemic has affected our perceptions of productivity is Joy Lanzendorfer. She's a journalist and author with an opinion piece in USA Today called COVID Cut into Hustle Culture. Is it time to finally turn against workaholism? Joy, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us today is Beatrice Foreman. Her recent article for The Goods on Vox is called The Soothing, Slightly Sinister World of Productivity Hacks, which looks at a strain of TikTok videos. Beatrice, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're also welcoming back Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langtu, a professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Dr. Langtu, welcome back. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you for having me back. Looking forward to this important conversation.
And listeners, we want to know, did you feel pressure, that pressure to be more productive, to grow as a person, maybe pick up a new skill, pick up that guitar that was collecting dust in the corner? How has the need to be productive affected you this past year? Do you hold yourself to a different standard than before? Join our conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Joy, before we get into pandemic specifics, let's start with, what is hustle culture? Can you talk about that? Why has it become so popular in the U.S.?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, this isn't about just hard work. It's taking hard work for your job to another level. It's this idea of rise and grind 24/7. When you're awake, you're essentially working. And it's basically the glamorization of workaholism. This notion that if you hustle hard enough and you strive for your work, you know, maybe you can be a mogul. You can be like Oprah or Bill Gates or something like that. It's a poisonous notion. It's somewhat unhealthy and deceptive, and it's definitely something that has taken more of a root the last couple of years in our culture.
I like that this idea in some ways ties back to like as far back as the gold rush in American culture in the 1800s. I wonder, Joy, when the pandemic hit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when the pandemic hit, most businesses are closed. Did you feel that pressure to, you know, grow or grind in your work?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm a author and a journalist, and I'm a freelance writer. And so that's been something that I've struggled with a lot in my career, is just this idea that, you know, how much work is too much work, and when is ambition turning sort of unhealthy, you know? And it does, you're right, absolutely right. It does go back to the gold rush. This idea that, you know, if you work really, really hard for a short period of time, all your dreams can come true and you can become fabulously wealthy. And it's somewhat of a problem, because it's hard to know, especially when you're working at home and working for yourself, when exactly to stop and how to find that work-life balance. And so, yeah, that's definitely something that I've had to reckon with myself in my own life.
Beatrice, how about you? Did the stay-at-home orders affect your sort of perception of the need to be productive this past year?
Definitely. So I'm actually a college student. I go to the University of Pennsylvania, as well as being an aspiring and technically full-time journalist. So I think over the past year, As my kind of social life dwindled down, I felt this pressure to work more because I had the time to. And as gratifying as all of it was, and to see those professional strides, definitely did take a toll on my personal life. And I found that just a lot of how I defined myself and the characteristics of myself that I liked were really work related. And I can definitely see that happening during the pandemic, as kind of the line between work and relaxation and play become so amorphous because you're working from home and those aspects of your life just bleeding into each other kind of like seamlessly.
All right, Dr. Langto, I have the same question for you, but I'm looking at the clock. We need to take a break here. So I'm going to ask you to hold on that thought, and we'll talk about that as soon as we get back. Listeners, you're welcome to join our conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Did you feel that rise and grind pressure during the pandemic? Are you rejecting it now? 800-222-9455. We'll be back after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the pandemic, the idea you all we started with at the beginning of the pandemic. We heard, you know, everybody's baking sourdough bread, they're taking up running, they're cleaning off those old musical instruments and or learning a foreign language. There was this intense pressure to be productive, to better yourself during this time. Now we're more than a year on. A lot of people are pushing back on those notions. We're talking about this with Joy Lanzendorfer, who's a journalist and author. Her recent opinion piece in USA Today is called COVID Cut into Hustle Culture. Is it time to finally turn against workaholism? We're also talking with Beatrice Foreman. Her recent article for The Goods on Vox is called The Soothing, Slightly Sinister World of Productivity Hacks. And Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langto, professor in the Department of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. 800-222-9455 is our number. 800-222-9455. Dr. Langto, before the break, I wanted to ask you, did you, your colleagues, your clients, have you heard about this sort of pandemic-related pressure to grow, to better oneself, and how did people respond to that?
Thank you so much for that question, and I really appreciate contextualizing it with culture. So yes, I experienced that pressure for sure. I experienced that sense of, I have so much time before me, I should being the operative word here, get more done. My students at the Chicago School experienced it. My own children were experiencing it. And I think what we're seeing a year and more in, is the pushback against that should. What is that should grounded in? Who says that I should be doing more towards work with my time rather than play? And I really look forward to the continued conversation around pushing back against that should. But yes, I experienced it. My children experienced it. My students at the Chicago School experienced it. And my private practice clients experienced it as well.
All right, we have a caller on the line. I'm going to go now to Adam is calling from Crystal Lake. Adam, thanks for calling in.
So I am a rock climbing gym owner here in Crystal Lake, Illinois. And I bought the gym in 2019. And I knew when I bought the gym that I was going to have to work hard for my thought was about a year to really get things up moving and stable. And obviously, as we went into the pandemic, that is not what happened at all. I had recently put in a really large investment in some renovations that were going to get started right around the time the pandemic happened. So I tied up a lot of the funds my business had into those renovations. And I had no money to bring anyone in to help me with those. So I ended up working about 60 hours a week throughout the entire shutdown. So while everyone else was kind of getting a break, I was still working hard. And then when we were able to reopen, I had no money to pay any of my employees. So I had to be the sole employee of my gym for about 2 months, which definitely war on me. It was more than I bargained for sure.
And how, where are you today? Are you feeling more balance in your life, or is it still rise and grind, as we were saying earlier?
You know what? I would really like to say that I am more balanced now. And I think that for the most part I am. I found that new normal, you know, people keep talking about. But it's definitely still a higher a higher level than I think I can sustain for much longer.
Okay. Dr. Langto, I wonder if you want to weigh in on anything we just heard there from Adam. And Adam, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with the gym.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Best wishes to the gym. And it sounds like quite the endeavor. You know, so many of the things that you pointed out speak to some of what I wanted to talk about today. Adam, when you set up this idea, and I think that it's important when we're thinking about work-life boundaries and balance, that we do a couple of things, that we spend time in the direction of our values, that we manage our expectations, that we set clear boundaries, and we take all aspects of our health into account, physical, emotional, and spiritual, and that we find time to play. What it sounds like is happening for you, Adam, is that you had this idea of how you wanted to spend your time and energies in the direction of your values, but that there were circumstances in the last year and a half that made it a lot different than you thought that it would look. I think what I appreciate that I hear in what you're saying is that it's clear to you that this is not sustainable, that it's not your intention to work 60 hours a week in the long term, that you recognize in the short term, right, given the circumstances, I have to do this amount of work in this period of time. And I guess what I would say is, moving forward, to continue to reevaluate the sustainability and the balance of what is happening for you. And I think that that will bring forth success for you, but as well as the other folks listening in on this call. I think that what's difficult about the hustle culture or the rise and grind culture is when there is not a boundary around it, when we think that we can sustain this over the long term and not 2 or 6 months while we're getting a business up off the ground. And that's a really important piece to remember. In the short term, if you have a goal that's in direction of your values, then it's okay to work a little bit more, but that's not sustainable over the long term.
All right. And I'm going to just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about how the pandemic has affected our perception of being productive. We're talking with Dr. Cynthia Lubin-Langto, who's a professor at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, clinical psychologist. Also, Beatrice Foreman, reporter with The Goods for Vox, and Joy Lanzendorfer, who's a journalist and author, recent opinion piece looking at hustle culture in USA Today. 800-222-9455 is our number. 800-222-9455. Beatrice, can you talk, since your story looked at TikTok, the video social media platform, and sort of the idea of influencers, what role do influencers, these people, play into hustle culture, right, with their constant pushing of content and creative life, et cetera, et cetera?
I guess the way I always looked at it, and it's just the lens I examine it in the piece I wrote, is that for young people like Gen Z, and I guess now Gen Alpha, who are like the new people being born, influencers are like the modern day gold rushers, the modern day San Francisco 49ers. These are people who put a lot of work very quickly to like amass intense amounts of fame. And I think influencers do this thing where like they kind of glorify the work they do, even if maybe it's not traditional work. They're monetizing all aspects of their lives, what they eat, who they hang out with, their workouts, the walks they go on. And I think for young people, that kind of creates this pressure where we think maybe everything we should be doing should be productive. Maybe everything we're doing should make us a little bit of money. Maybe I should turn my passions and my hobbies into a side hustle. And while the entrepreneurial spirit may also kind of be tied to a certain insecurity around the job market and to the economy, I think it's coming out of this need that maybe we don't feel like we're doing enough because we're constantly seeing other people do more on social media.
As a journalist, I hear a little bit of that. I mean, I feel like I'm sort of always on call looking for story ideas or conversation ideas for the show here. But it sounds like what Beatrice is describing there is taking that to like a much greater horrifying level. Joy, can you talk about, you know, we were talking about passion projects, but I mean, the pandemic has also sort of shed a light on the dark side of the hustle culture. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the world, it's really bad for your health. So the World Health Organization has recently said that working 55 5 hours a week constitutes a serious health hazard. So there's a risk of stroke and heart disease, and they credit 745,000 deaths worldwide to working overtime. So it does have this serious side to it, where if you make this your lifestyle, it can actually really hurt you physically. And it also, you know, takes a toll on your relationships and the other parts of your life, which makes sense. If you start applying, you know, all of your life to your work, you don't have time for anything else, including your health and including your family. And so, you know, it can lead you into this a very like dark and unhealthy spiral eventually.
Dr. Langtu, a lot of people tie their self-worth to how productive they are. Can you talk about shifting that perspective, maybe finding other ways of looking at self-worth?
Absolutely. I think both what Joy and Beatrice have brought up and did earlier in thinking about our larger culture has so much to do with this and our identities. I liken this to what I call internalized capitalism, which suggests that individuals grow to equate their productivity with their self-worth. So how much I'm making and how much I'm producing is directly related to self-worth. And it's just not true. How do we know that we might be suffering from internalized capitalism? Here are some of the signs. We believe that hard work brings happiness. We feel guilty when we're resting or playing. We use the word lazy to describe downtime, right? We prioritize work over our health, that's sleeping, eating, or working out. And we prioritize work over relationships. All of those signs that we've internalized capitalism and we're putting our self-worth directly related to our productivity. What's the solution, you ask? The solution is to clarify and center your values. Decide the things that are important to you and make sure that your time reflects that, that your energies are going in the direction of your values. Remind yourself that your work is not you. Your work is separate from you. Your work is something that you do. You are who you are, and you are enough.
Yeah, I recently heard someone saying, don't base your self-worth on, you know, somewhere from which you can be fired at a moment's notice.
That's great advice. Absolutely. Yeah. And I would extend that. Don't base your self-worth on anything that's not about who you are and your values. Absolutely, Brian.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Langtu, I guess, do you have any additional in the final minute or so we have in our conversation? And I should say, we were talking about a conversation among the producers, as we do every morning, putting our show together. And one of my colleagues referred me to, I believe it's an outfit calling themselves the Nap Authority, which is sort of an art group that stages these, you know, they put a bed in a public place as an art installation, and they call it Rest is Resistance. The Nap Ministry, thank you. Someone corrected me. Dr. Langtu, what are some other ways, other outside of, you know, taking up art installations of public napping? What are some other ways people can instill work-life boundaries?
Right. I love the idea of, you know, taking time to rest. And rest is resistance, right? Besides spending time in the direction of your values, manage your expectations and those of whom with whom you work. Clarify boundaries. Learn to say no and have that be a full sentence. Make sure that you're taking all aspects of your health, physical, emotional, and spiritual, into account and prioritizing all of those. And play, 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 play. Get lots of rest, but when you get up from that rest, you know, dance, laugh, make music, create. Do things that bring joy to your spirit. I would also say another large piece, so that's what individuals can do. I think that as we go back, one of the best things that we can do is organizations can play a large part in cultivating a culture that centers well-being and our humanity while also supporting work and organizational goals. And I think individually and collectively, if we do those things, we'll be a much better, happier, and successful group of folks.
Well, this conversation has brought joy to my spirit. So I want to thank Dr. Cynthia Lubin Langtu of the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Beatrice Foreman with The Goods from Vox, and Joy Lanzendorfer, who's a journalist and author, recent opinion piece in USA Today. Joy, Beatrice, Dr. Langtu, thank you so much for being with us. Good conversation today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for having me.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's our first live remote broadcast since the start of the pandemic. We're traveling to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, which has set up a working radio studio as part of its temporary State of Sound exhibit. We'll be touring the exhibit, which collects sound and artifacts from Illinois' long musical history. And we'll also be talking with a music historian and the museum's new director. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. And one final note before we go today. This is, I'm sad to say, the last day for our engagement producer, Chantal Vaca. She's produced some great conversations for us, including the one we just heard. And she's connected with many of you through our Text the 21st group. Chantal is heading to New York, where she'll be pursuing a master's degree from Columbia University, one of the most prestigious journalism schools in the country. Chantal, we're sad to say goodbye, but we're also excited to see where your career takes you. Best of luck in New York. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca, for the last time, is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, live from the Abraham Lincoln Museum in Springfield.